Her research interests include determinants of maternal mortality and morbidities, access to obstetric care, and the structural, social, and interpersonal factors that configure maternal health disparities. And you wonder why the average person has trouble understanding us sometimes. Really excellent. Dr. Eliade's recent work at UCSF has focused on evaluating the effectiveness of the non-pneumatic anti-shock garment on adverse maternal outcomes from obstetric hemorrhage, and she's working to develop a research program to improve the evidence base around prevention and treatment of obstetric fistula in sub-Saharan Africa. Dr. Eliade.
Thank you, Miriam. Thank you all for being here today. So my presentation today will address time to recovery from hypovolemic shock secondary to obstetric hemorrhage with early non-pneumatic anti-shock garment intervention. So throughout the talk today, I'm going to refer to the non-pneumatic anti-shock garment as the NASG for brevity. So the NASG, for those of you who may not have heard of it, it's a device that's used to treat shock, resuscitate, stabilize, and prevent further bleeding in women with any obstetric hemorrhage etiology. It's a simple neoprene and Velcro garment. It's made up of six separate segments, as you can see in the picture, which are applied sequentially from the ankles to the abdomen. There's also a foam ball in the abdomen. You can see it puffing up in the picture that compresses the uterine artery. So as shown in the top image, a woman in shock from obstetric hemorrhage is experiencing pooling of blood in her extremities in addition to blood loss from her uterus. So the NASG applies circumferential pressure to around the legs to shunt the blood from the legs into the core so it can perfuse the vital organs. In addition, the foam ball compressing the uterine artery reduces blood flow and prevents further blood loss from the uterus. The NASG has a unique role as a first aid device for obstetric hemorrhage by stabilizing women until they reach definitive care. It can help women to overcome what might otherwise be fatal delays in accessing emergency obstetric care. It's also the only technology that can be used at the community or primary care level to reduce adverse outcomes. And it can be applied by a variety of people with minimal training. It only takes a couple of minutes to apply. It's important to note, however, that the NASG is not definitive care for obstetric hemorrhage. It used to be in conjunction with other treatments, including restoration of blood volume and any etiology-specific procedures. The NASG allows for complete perineal access for any vaginal procedures that need to be done, and the abdominal segment can be removed for surgery and replaced afterwards. So previous research on the NASG in referral care facilities found significantly reduced measured blood loss, faster recovery from shock, as well as decreased mortality and extreme adverse outcome, which is a combined measure of severe maternal morbidity and mortality. Our research group has documented NASG use in over 8,000 women from our studies, as well as our implementation projects, with no safety issues reported. Because of these findings, the NASG has been recommended as a temporizing measure for postpartum hemorrhage by the World Health Organization, International Federation of Gynecology and Obstetrics, Global Library of Women's Medicine. So given its ability to overcome delays in care, the NASG is particularly suited for use at the community or primary care level. So we conducted a cluster randomized controlled trial to evaluate what the effect was of earlier NASG intervention on outcomes. We randomized 38 primary care clinics, that referred to six referral facilities in Harare, Zimbabwe, and Lusaka, and the Copperbelt province, Zambia, to intervention or control status. The intervention group received the NASG at the primary health clinic before they were transferred to the referral facility, whereas the control group did not receive the NASG until they reached the referral hospital. Both groups received standard hemorrhage and shock care. So the participants in our study were women who sought maternity care in a steady clinic, who developed or presented hypovolemic shock secondary to obstetric hemorrhage. We define this as visually estimated blood loss equal to or greater than 500 milliliters, pulse greater than or equal to 100 beats per minute, and systolic blood pressure less than or equal to 100 millimeters mercury. They also needed to provide informed consent to participate. And we evaluated a number of outcomes, as you can see here. The analysis that I'm presenting today focuses on time to recovery, which is defined as minutes to normal shock index from study entry. So we use shock index as our metric for identifying the point at which a person had become stable, and it's really a measure of hemodynamic instability. It's calculated as the ratio of heart rate to systolic blood pressure. The normal range of shock index, which is actually generated from a non-obstetric population, we don't have that value for pregnant women, is 0.5 to 0.7. So previous research has noted that shock index is a promising indicator of condition severity for acute hypovolemia. It's proven to be an early indicator of compromise, and it's been found to have greater sensitivity than other vital stats alone, such as pulse or blood pressure. This is because these measures are not as sensitive to the body's physiological compensatory mechanisms, which occur in early shock, which essentially what happens, the body is able to maintain adequate blood pressure despite loss of blood volume until approximately 30% of the total blood volume is lost. Of course, this depends on the woman's health status at that time. Less blood loss is adequate for decompensatory shock in women who are already compromised going into childbirth. So the analysis sample for the shock index focus included 801 patients. We had 373 intervention and 428 control. We had to exclude a certain number of people from our full sample of 887. There were a few people that didn't have adequate data on their flow charts, as well as several patients who received anesthesia for treatment, which resulted in a false elevation of blood pressure. That's something that we're trying to figure out how to deal with. We had data for these women approximately every 15 minutes. And we used a threshold for shock index of 0.98, which is consistent with the study exit criteria for our project. We also smoothed the trajectories over time so that recovery was defined by the first time a person experienced two subsequent normal shock index readings. And our analysis comprised a Cox proportional hazards regression. We had used a robust variance estimator to account for clustering. And our primary analysis was intention to treat. However, we had several protocol violations within the intervention group where women in the intervention group actually did not receive the NHG until they reached the referral hospital level. So we also looked at the data as treated. This table presents our participant characteristics at study entry. Overall, the groups are quite similar. There are some small differences in hemorrhage diagnosis by group. This chart shows our survival function. The blue line indicates the control group, and the red line indicates the intervention group. So we see here that the hazards are indeed proportional. And we found that the median time to normal shock index from study entry was about 40 minutes faster in the intervention group versus the control group for our intention to treat analysis. In the as-treated analysis, it was about 55 minutes difference. The rate of return to normal shock index was 25% faster among the intervention group versus the control group in the intention to treat analysis. This is our hazard ratio of 1.25. This was statistically significant in both our intention to treat analysis as well as our as-treated analysis. And as expected, we had a slightly increased rate, faster rate among the as-treated analysis versus the ITT. So overall, the strengths of the study are the fact that we have a robust study design. We looked at both the effects of the treatment as assigned and as received. And we have a conservative analysis to account for our clustering study design. Some of the limitations include the fact that we did have to exclude a certain number of people for anesthesia, as well as some missingness in the longitudinal data. Overall, we conclude that earlier application of the NEHG was associated with faster recovery from hypovolemic shock, and this finding supports situating the NEHG at the primary care level or on ambulances within a continuum of care approach for obstetric hemorrhage. A few next steps for further research on time to recovery. As I said before, Another analysis that we looked at was the time to blood transfusion or IV fluids, and we found no difference between the groups. So, well, we did look at whether there was that difference there in receipt of co-interventions. We need to do a more complex analysis, bringing in the particular time and volume of each treatment to better understand how the NEHG changes the recovery trajectory for women with obstetric hemorrhage. There also needs to be more broad research on defining what a meaningful shock index threshold is, as well as the distribution for the obstetric population. This is something we really have no data on, and I think would be immensely useful, particularly because we're seeing such predictability in trauma population, and it could really be great for women in obstetric emergencies. Thank you very much.
Very interesting. Questions?
I have a question. I think that the garment is a great invention as an obstetrician working in this, so I don't want to make it sound like I'm hesitant about that. My question really comes to how did you introduce this garment and whether the intervention groups got a more comprehensive training in obstetric care and the control groups also got that training, or did the control groups not get any training or garment and the intervention did?
We actually conducted two phases prior to the introduction of the cluster randomized trial, where we introduced the garment at the referral care facility level, and we made sure that everyone was trained there. We also did a lot of training on standard obstetric hemorrhage protocol in both intervention and control. And then after the referral care facilities were using the NEHG very well, we then moved to the clinics and did the same training at both places with the exception of implementing the NEHG.
One more question.
Well, she stole the first
okay.
part of my question. The second part of my question I'll just ask is, where do you think is the best, what's the best setting for use for this product?
Well, I think the best, you know, that's a very tricky question because I don't know that there's one best setting. I think as availability of obstetric care, emergency obstetric care, changes as we make improvements in that over time. I mean, we found at the referral hospital level that there was approximately a 50% reduction in extreme adverse outcomes at a place where women should have blood transfusion, surgery, any of the treatment options that they need available. At the same time, I think that we're facing so many delays at the community and primary care level because of the need to transport to facilities that do have those capacities available. So I think that until we're able to overcome delays at the referral hospital level, it still can be very useful there. I think that it is great to bring in at the community and primary care level, particularly because that's the level where most women in developing countries are giving birth, and we could then reach them at an earlier period and stabilize them until they can reach definitive care.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.